IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines. Iran's leader slams the U.S. for shamelessly vetoing a U.N. resolution on a Gaza ceasefire and says the U.S., the U.K., and the Israeli regime are the same. As the U.S. Blocks the U.N. Security Council from announcing a ceasefire in Gaza, Israeli warplanes kill more Palestinian civilians. And people in Niger celebrate departure of the last French troops from their homeland as anti-colonial sentiments are running high throughout Africa. Hello and welcome to World News. Our top story, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has lashed out at the United States for blocking a UN Security Council resolution on establishment of a ceasefire in Gaza. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei added, U.S. has been disgraced as a true face of Western-style civilization and has been unmasked during the Israeli war on Gaza. He said Palestinians' great victory lies in the fact they debunked the West and U.S. false claim of being advocates of human rights. Ayatollah Khamenei underlined, there is no difference between the Israeli regime, the United States, and Britain, as they are all one and the same. He said there is no doubt that one day the Israeli regime will be wiped off the face of the earth. And joining us now from London is Sayyid Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator. For more on the story, hello, Sayyid Abbas. Pleasure to have you on the program. Your thoughts on the Iranian leader's remarks there, saying that U.S. is complicit and shameless in its protection of the Israeli regime.
Well, you know, the human rights that the West advocates so hypocritically, the democracy they advocate so hypocritically, the equality they talk about endlessly in lecture, certainly the global South, with, of course, the whole idea of them being peacemakers. And finally, their whole idea of wanting benign progress for all of the world and their humanitarian exploits across the world have all been laid to bear in this kind of real microcosm of it really is a satanic kind of evil. It shows no mercy, there is no compassion, there has been no courage, there's been no valor on their part in this. All of the human values that we'd aspire to, honesty, integrity, all of that has totally been exposed in a way which I haven't seen it done before. We've seen wars that the West conducted in Syria and beyond, but they've managed to somehow juggle this kind of moral relativism and this kind of moral ambivalence that they've spread across within their own people and managed, and through the propaganda, hold it. But on this occasion, with over 26,000 Palestinians killed, out of which at least 11,000 are children, the displacement, the ethnic cleansing, the notion that right is might, the complete destruction of residences, the unashamed real war crimes and the real unabashed humanitarian disaster with the starvation, with the lack of electricity, with all the gas being closed off, this whole open air prison business, they've really exposed themselves, because what they've shown is that they're not into any of those things they talked about, and even their own populations know it. If it wasn't clear to them before, they certainly know it now. And I think what Ayatollah Khamenei talks about is something the world often misses. This word civilization that you mentioned in your question, what is civilization if it's not those things? If it doesn't stand for the values of keeping up basic human rights, then what is it? And then so it begs the question, what are Western human rights? What's this sham, what this lie, and what's the responsibility of Western citizens who keep electing killers, psychopaths, murderers, people who have a conscience which is so devoid of humanity that they can justify all this. Well, you know, the people are fed up. I think that they're living, most of them, in fear. And what Ayatollah Khamenei talks about is this new civilization, which I often hear about, the new Islamic civilization. And people fear the idea of what this is, because Islam has been hijacked by Western entities, like Western created entities like ISIS, who purport to be Islam. And then everybody else who seems to get hold of this word turns it into something monstrous. But the reality of the Islamic vision and the civilization which is in place for hundreds of years is exactly this. Humanitarianism is about, it's about giving people their rights. It's about you know, tackling things like the apartheid state that we have on our hands. It's not something that would be tolerated. And it remains, I think, for the axis of resistance. And those people in the axis of resistance go beyond the people who are fighting on the war fronts in West Asia. They now are in the streets of London, they're in the streets of San Francisco, they're in the streets of, Bangkok. All over the world, people are waking up to this extreme situation where, Gaza demonstrates so many things. 15-minute cities, the idea of surveillance cities, the ideas that you can bully people into going wherever you want them to go, the notions around the Agenda 2030, which talk about depopulation. If you look carefully at those agendas, the broader agendas of the parasite elites, what you see is that in Gaza and with the Palestinians, they try to exercise all of those things, and people don't like it. Quite clearly around the world, there's a reaction to this.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you, Sayed. We are out of time, but thanks for joining us for your take on this. From London, Sayed Mohsen Abbas, they're joining us. Meanwhile, Israel continues pounding the besieged Gaza Strip, where every new airstrike and shelling further worsens the humanitarian situation there. Latest attacks have targeted a home in the central city of Deir al-Bala, killing two people there. The eastern part of the city also witnessed fresh artillery strikes. The Israeli military shelled the southern city of Khan Yunis as well. And to the north, Israeli warplanes dropped bombs on the city of Jabalia. According to reports, regime's forces are trying to advance into the city, disrupting all lines of communications. Israel's genocidal war on Gaza has now entered its 78th day. Total death toll stands at over 20,000, majority of the victims, women and children. Those who have survived the war are living in dire conditions. The World Health Organization has renewed a warning that famine is looming in the Palestinian territory. The UN Security Council has passed a resolution to facilitate aid deliveries to Gaza, which is reeling from a deadly and devastating Israeli onslaught. The resolution, however, has failed to call for a cease. The original draft by the UAE was repeatedly watered down by the U.S. to remove a clause for a cessation or even a suspension of Israeli attacks. This provoked outrage from Russia, which also pointed to what it called a dangerous provision in the final draft, which allows Israel to continue its genocide in Gaza.
In the last few days, the Security Council, and together with it, the entire world, has been witness to the latest, and I'm not afraid to use this word, shameful, cynical, and irresponsible conduct by the United States. The world media and public this entire time have been wondering, why is the vote constantly being delayed on the UAE proposed draft, which was already put in blue? The answer is very simple. The United States, under various pretexts, has been dragging out the negotiating process, deviating from the normal, transparent negotiating work. Instead of this, they have resorted to their favored tactic of gross pressure, blackmail, and twisting arms so that at the last minute, they'd be able to present the members of the Council with an ultimatum. Either the Council adopts a text that is convenient for Washington, or the United States will once again block the adoption of any product. Through the efforts of the American delegation, the draft resolution has included an extremely dangerous element for the future of Gaza. Instead of the wording on an immediate cessation of violence in OP2, an ambiguous phrase has appeared calling for the parties to create conditions for a cessation of hostilities. colleagues, destruction or displacement or the exile of the population of Gaza in a cynical reading, and that is precisely how it is going to be read in Israel, would also create the conditions for a cessation of hostilities. By signing off on this, the Council would essentially be giving the Israeli armed forces complete freedom of movement for further clearing of the Gaza Strip, and anyone who votes in favor of the text as it is currently worded would bear responsibility for that, essentially becoming complicit in the destruction of Gaza.
The Russian representative also criticized the failure of the resolution to condemn indiscriminate attacks on civilians. He said this gives Israel a green light to further its war crimes. Nebenzia also proposed an amendment to the UN resolution, but this was vetoed by the U.S. America has always used its veto power at the Security Council to nix resolutions critical of Israel. Author and political commentator Jamal Khanj says U.S. has watered down the Security Council resolution on Gaza to give the Israeli regime more leeway to press ahead with its genocidal war against Palestinians.
The U.S. started, you know, with the whole war of genocide in Gaza, started with the motto that Israel has the right to defend itself. There is no such thing as a right to defend itself when you are an occupier, when you are imposing a siege on an entity for more than 18 years. Under international law, there is no such self-defense excuse. However, still they have used it. So what I'm trying to say, it really does not need a justification. It just needs something to basically cover the act of the Israeli government and allow it to continue doing what they are doing, despite the fact that they are saying at one point, you know, we want Israel to play down its raids on Gaza and possibly change its military operations to minimize the killing of civilians. I mean, this is really a racist statement when somebody says we want them to minimize the killing of civilians, instead of saying we need to stop the murdering of civilians.
The Hamas resistance movement has called the UN Security Council resolution on Gaza insufficient due to its failure to call for a ceasefire. Hamas said the move does not address a current catastrophic situation in Gaza created by what the movement called Israeli terror apparatus. Hamas stressed the resolution specifically fails to call for an end to the war of genocide against the Palestinians of Gaza. The movement added the U.S. watered down the resolution to pave way for what it called the massacre and terror in the territory. Hamas called on the Security Council to require Israel to deliver aid to the Gaza Strip. Meanwhile, the Palestinian ambassador to the UN says the overwhelming majority of member states have been mobilizing for an immediate ceasefire.
No one should forget that what we are talking about are 2.3 million Palestinians who have been fighting for their life and facing death every single day for 75 days. They have been fighting for their lives, for their very existence, for over 75 days. Mr. President, the Arab and the OIC groups, with the support of an overwhelming number of UN member states, have been mobilizing for three objectives. And we said that from the beginning. End the carnage immediately. Immediate ceasefire, humanitarian assistance at scale, and no forced displacement. We meet today as part of this continuous effort to advance these three goals.
We have intense shelling there in central Gaza by the Israeli regime against civilian infrastructure there in Deir al-Balah. As soon as we find out more about this attack, intense artillery shelling there by the regime, will get it out to you accordingly. Meanwhile, Masoud Shajada is chairman of the London-based Islamic Human Rights Commission. He says U.S. is buying time for Israel to commit more genocide in Gaza.
In short, too little, too late. I mean, the fact of the matter is that the whole of the international community are screaming that something needs to be done. There has to be ceasefire. There has to be an end to this genocide, which has already killed more than 20,000 innocent people. Overwhelming majority of them are women and children. And we know very clearly that this is not it. As a matter of fact, there are many bodies who are under the rubbles, and they haven't been found yet. And people are starving. There is such a chaos, such a murderous plot being unleashed. And all the time, United States has been buying time, so more innocent people to be killed, more women, more children, more destruction, more hospitals, more schools, more churches, mosques, etc., to be destroyed. This is outrageous. This is really outrageous. Even at this 11th hour, they come up with this plot to actually change the wording, to sort of give the Zionist state, this illegal, brutal occupier, this system which is systematically committing genocide, more time to kill more, and with the impunity.
And yet another heinous crime, the Israeli army has arrested a number of Red Crescent workers who were on duty at a hospital in the Jabalia refugee camp. The incident took place Friday morning, and it's not the first time the Israeli regime has arrested medical personnel. Already, over 100 medical staff have been arrested while working at hospitals in northern Gaza. The Hamas resistance movement says the move constitutes a war crime and proves the fascism of the enemy, which is systematically destroying the health sector. Hamas called on international organizations to shoulder their responsibilities and protect medical facilities, and medical workers to put pressure on the Israeli regime to immediately release all Palestinians kidnapped from shelters and hospitals. France finally withdraws all troops from its former colony Niger, sparking celebrations throughout the African country. France maintained nearly 1,500 soldiers in Niger, but announced a pullout after Nigerian generals following last year's coup demanded they depart. It was the third time in less than 18 months the French troops were sent packing after two other former colonies, Mali and Burkina Faso, did the same. All three nations are battling insurgency for over a decade now, but their relations nosedive since a string of coups throughout the region. Many Western countries, including the U.S., maintain a military in the Sahel region under the pretext of fighting terrorism. However, they are accused of failing in their mission, and many Africans also see foreign troops as part of a neo-colonial project to keep control over African resources. And that brings us to the end of your news bulletin, everyone. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran while shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Iran is a country rich in culture, history, and art. The countless historical monuments scattered across the land are manifest proof of the glory of the ancient Persian civilization. And the development of modern-day Iran is evident in its major cities and metropolitan centers. But perhaps what's remained hidden from both foreign and domestic tourists are some of Iran's stunning natural treasures. I'm Daniel Arya. As the 18th largest country in the world, Iran offers a full gamut of climates and geographical attractions, from mountains and deserts to forests and caves. Iran's diverse and dramatic landscapes offer some truly awe-inspiring and unspoiled views to discover. In this week's program, we'll follow Javad Gharai, an Iranian nature explorer and documentary filmmaker, to the southern regions of Iran, where the hot sand dunes of the desert meet the turquoise and tranquil waters of the Sea of Oman. Stay with us.
Travel is the most important thing in life to me. The reason I travel so much to the unknown spots of my motherland is that I want to discover the hidden beauties of its environment and to meet its diverse ethnic groups. I believe that city dwellers, with all their knowledge, education, and modernity, must have a good relationship with the natural environment and with nature dwellers in order to live a richer, more peaceful life. A relationship like this is vital for our survival in the world we live in. It's early February. In this season, temperatures can plunge to minus 40 degrees in the towering Mount Damavand region. But I've come to a part of Iran where the temperature is as high as 20 degrees above, perfect for a good, long trip in the winter. I'm Javad Gharai. I'm an Iran trotter, and this time I have traveled to the southernmost spot in my beloved country, Iran. Follow me to one of the most beautiful and pristine areas of my country, in the southern province of Sistan and Balochistan. To be exact, my destination is the southernmost area of the vast Balochistan region. In terms of culture and ethnic groups, Sistan and Balochistan province is divided into two parts, Sistan in the north and Balochistan in the south. During my many trips to the natural beauties of beloved Iran, I have come across multiple beautiful mountains and spent time traversing most of them, from freezing tall rocky mountains to forested highlands to those sitting on the hot and dry deserts of Iran. But this time, on one leg of my trip to Sistan and Balochistan province, I'm supposed to find mountains that are impossible to climb. The shape of these mountains, or should I say hills, is unique and beautiful. The locals and tourists who have visited this area have named these hills Martian Mountains. Many believe that the rocky formations in this part of Iran are very similar to those on the surface of planet Mars. Geological experts say these hills are sediments at the bottom of a sea that used to be here millions of years ago, were initially buried under millions of tons of soil following the change in the shape of the Earth's crust over the years, and were later unearthed as a result of climatic changes and monsoon rains that washed away the dirt, exposing the real face of these bizarre hills. These mountains are among the most beautiful in Iran, in my opinion. They are no less beautiful than Mount Damavand that's been registered as a national heritage. I hope the Martian mountains of Sistan and Balochistan province, of the Balochistan area in the Chabahar region to be exact, are also put on the national heritage list. The thrust of the Gulf of Oman oceanic crust under the southern area of Balochistan, in addition to wind and water erosions, are among the reasons behind the emergence of these beautiful elevations. They are made up of sedimentary rocks containing clay and lime. The beautiful furrows on their exterior have been carved out by centuries of erosion. The heights of Martian hills vary from one area to another. At their shortest, they stand at more than 5 meters tall, and at their highest, more than 100 meters. At first glance, these hills, referred to as badlands by geologists, may look like they are not very resistant, but you will change your mind once you inspect them up close, although they're not resistant enough against the rain and water of Balochistan. In the midst of these mountains is a plain where rainwater has accumulated over many years, creating a spectacular lagoon by the name of Lipar. Environmentally, Lipar, with its many and varied animal and plant species, is an important lagoon in the region. It is an important feature of the natural environment in Balochistan. The local population use water from the lagoon for their animals and in farming. I'm on my way to one of the most beautiful valleys in the Martian Mountains. I've named it the Snail Valley. If you want to know why I picked that name for it, follow me. We walk for about an hour to get to the mouth of the valley. Floodwaters set off by seasonal rains have created a beautiful and unspoiled valley and cave. This is the Nahadi Cave. It acts as the entrance to the Snail Valley. My good friend here, Shir Muhammad, was kind enough to come here from Berries to help me find this cave and walk through it to the valley. I'm sure we are in for a treat. Am I right? The valley, I mean the Snail Valley, is a very long and deep gorge that leads to the Terap Mountain. Terap is what the locals call that mountain. The reason I named this the Snail Valley is because this place is littered with shell fossils. You can see them everywhere in this mountain and in this valley. Beautiful shell fossils that have adorned this boulder and this whole area. All the exterior walls of these Martian or miniature mountains and inside the Snail Valley is covered with these shells that have turned into fossil. Another reason is that this valley looks exactly like a snail. It meanders through the mountain from beginning to end. In some places, it wraps around itself and sends you going around in circles before you can get to the other end of it. The Snail Valley is so curvy. It's one of the most beautiful gorges in the Balochistan region. And let's not forget that if a place has a local name attached to it, we should never try and put a new name on it. We must follow the tradition of the locals who have inherited that name from their forefathers, from their ancestors. So once again, we should use the same names as they do. The gorge is almost impassable in some parts. But I am so enchanted by its beauty, I've decided to move as far as humanly possible. Its many twists and turns and the millions of fossils on its walls have redoubled my resolve to move forward. We are around 10 kilometers away from the Sea of Oman. This is a very high altitude. Obviously, thousands, in other words, millions of years ago, this whole area had been under the Sea of Oman, part of what used to be the Tethys Ocean. These fossil shells date back to that time. These are millions of years old. Every time I step into valleys or Martian hills like these, I'm filled with utter joy. But I'd never take any of these back home with me or use them as ornaments. All I do is pick them up, snap photos of them, and put them back where I found them, to share all these beauties with posterity. We must protect these treasures. We are their guardians. We walk a long way and eventually arrive at a dead end. That's when we have to trace our way back. Fortunately, there are no construction operations going on anywhere close to the Martian mountains, and that adds to the beauty and magnificence of the area. After my visit to the Martian hills, I continue my journey to one of the most beautiful semi-traditional wharfs in Iran, the Berri's Fisherman's Wharf. It is operated by the inhabitants of Berri's village, perched on top of these escarpments. Before the village was relocated to the top of the coastal cliffs, it used to be somewhere on the sand beach. Today, the locals call it Old Berri's. The villagers moved from Old Berri's to New Berri's around 20 years ago. One of the most important reasons for their relocation was the strong winds in the area that would blow for 120 days in a row and dump sand and dust on the village. The second reason was the beautiful Berri's Wharf. The architecture used in the homes and other buildings in Balochistan has vividly been inspired by Indian and Pakistani architectural designs. They use different, beautiful, vibrant colors in their buildings. The old mosque here is located in the area where old berries used to be. The rest of the village lies in ruins. They stripped the old buildings of their doors and windows and used them in their buildings in new berries. But they have left this mosque intact. Everything in this mosque is there, just as it has always been. That's because the Muslim population in Balochistan have utmost respect for their mosques and sacred buildings. They never demolish them. They abandon such buildings and let nature take its course. The main occupation of the people of Berris is fishing. The men of this land depend on the sea for their livelihood. Some strike out to the sea in small boats and throw their small nets in to catch fish. Others go out in wooden launches, which could be called the biggest of man-made contraptions. They go out to sea and spend months fishing. These large wooden motorboats are equipped with proper refrigerators and air conditioning for the crew. The fishermen here say they are not happy with their catches in recent years. They say marine life populations have shrunk drastically. The declining numbers of fish in seas and oceans has its cause in different and important reasons. The first reason behind the decrease in the numbers of marine life around the world is the boom in the human population on Earth. The growth in the human population has led to a larger demand for fish and in turn to overfishing by those in the fishing industry. Operations that are carried out via large ocean-going trawlers fitted with radars and other high-tech equipment. Ships that have nets running several kilometers and by means of radars can trap thousands of fish in every attempt in the depths of oceans. In almost every catch, these ships bring home fish weighing upwards of 300,000 kilos altogether. Industrial fishing and the overconsumption of marine life by humans leaves the fish no time to reproduce, pushing many species to the brink of extinction. In a recent survey, researchers at the University of British Columbia found that in half a century, human consumption has pushed down big fish populations by 90%, fish that are in high demand on the market. They have predicted that if serious action is not taken against overfishing by developed countries, all these species of fish will have gone extinct by 2050. Marine life populations are on the decline, which will have dire consequences for humans and the environment alike. The ecosystems of seas and oceans are intertwined with the lives of humans and the environment they live in. They are all very fragile. Iran accounts for only a small portion of the marine life caught around the world. The reasons being high prices, the small share the marine animals have of the Iranian diet, and the absence of advanced fishing vessels in the country. But European countries, the United States, Japan, and many other developed countries play an important role in the destruction of marine ecosystems. They have done more damage to the environment than any other country in the world. And this is a result of a boom in their populations, a change in consumption patterns, and the lifestyle of the people living in those countries. There are two other important reasons that have contributed to the dwindling numbers of marine animals: contamination and global warming. Berris is a very beautiful wharf. It was built at the foot of the Berris cliffs, offering a spectacular view. Launches and boats return here with their catch of the day to sell their prized sea creatures to the middleman. Beautiful the fellow is. The local fishermen here call it the kelkita in their local dialect. It's so colorful. Unfortunately, she too is still carrying her eggs. They get caught in the fisherman's net in this season. Most of those I've seen were ready to spawn. This is their time to reproduce, but they don't get the chance to do it. They are pulled out of the water along with the thousands of eggs that they are carrying in their abdomens. Poor thing is struggling to get out of my hand. Just look how beautiful it is. So colorful. One of the fishermen gave me lobster and said I could have it, but I'm gonna let it go because it's carrying so many eggs. After my visit to Berris Wharf, I set off on a walking journey along the shores of the Sea of Oman. Of course, I'll be walking on the cliffs all along. The view from atop the cliffs in Berris is simply matchless. Fortunately, there aren't constructions of any kind up here. The area is an asset for Balochistan and indeed for Iran because of its pristineness. I hope to see the same unspoiled beauties and pristineness the next time I visit this part of my country and its beautiful landscape. I hope more and more tourists come to visit Balochistan. Nature travelers go to places that are pristine and untouched in order to immerse themselves in the peace and quiet that those places offer. Beautiful rocky cliffs are where Berris begins. Those are the shores of Berris, among the most beautiful of our beloved country, Iran. But the bluff along the shore is crumbling into the sea. The waves lap at the walls made up of millennia-old sediments that settled on the bottom of the Sea of Oman that used to cover this whole area. The bluff is capped by a 2-meter-high layer of rock, like the one I'm sitting on right now. It feels like reinforced mortar with all the shells and algae in it, fossils that have been here for thousands, or should I say millions of years. But the layers underneath are weak and brittle, allowing the waves to chip away at them one bit at a time. The green blocks or rocks that you see on the coast are in fact the top layer of the cliff. They used to be up where I am right now. It's going to take the waves some time to turn them into sand and dissolve them in the water. It's about 60 meters down to the foot of the cliff, and as you can see, a huge slice of the cliff has splintered from the rest, or should I say from Berris territory, and will crash into the sea one of these days. So I better cross onto the other side because it's dangerous to stand here. I really don't want to go down with it. This gaping crack here is almost 10 meters deep, but it's very likely for it to be much deeper in other parts. It's too dark for me to see. This is a very dangerous spot.
English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to Arabi English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
This is for a better life. For a better life.
فرمود باعث تو لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. IRIB English Radio again at your service. Welcome back, dear listeners, to the program For a Better Life. I am Bita, and once again, I have the honor and opportunity to be next to you in this road and long path of having a nice life. As you know, in the last episodes, we were talking about the approaches towards spirituality, and we talked about two important approaches which was discussed both in philosophy and the social studies, and also in our religion, the complete religion of Islam. The first one was the spirituality as combat with the self, or jihad al-nafs, and the second one was spirituality as a medicine. So in this episode specifically, we're going to talk about another method, way, and approach toward spirituality, which is a spirituality as a journey. In Islamic literature, spirituality is also described as a journey. We should think of ourselves as travelers, that we are here traveling, experiencing, and enjoying a beautiful journey. And as you know, we have all this mission towards this journey away from God, and then we're going back to Him. And as you are all aware of this beautiful verse from the Holy Quran, that you are from me and you're gonna come back to me, and you can see the beauty of creation of human beings here, that we are all from the God Himself, and the destination of every human being is God, and in this journey, in this little and short journey, there are so many obstacles, there are so many challenges, there are so many times that you forget your destination, which is Allah Almighty. And this is the beauty of it. Let's keep it in the optimistic point of view. Here, this is so beautiful to have this mindset about the journey that we are going through. And, you know, we have all been created by God, and this creation is a sort of separation from our origin. Before we were created, we were not separate from God, but now we are. So, however, God has given us the chance to return to Him. Let's have this beautiful verse from the Holy Quran that I actually gave a gist of it to you. Truly we belong to God, and to Him we will return. It has a bit of a sad concept, because we recite this beautiful verse whenever one person dies. But it is, you know, deeper than that. It is something like we are facing in every day of our life. And I think this is not a verse of death. This is a verse of life. And when we depart, our destination is clear. But in order to reach our destination, we must be very careful about our direction. If we are on the right path, we will certainly reach our destination. As I told you, it's a little and short journey, but you know, it takes a lot of time, it takes a lot of energy. It takes you to be a real human being and use your whole potential in order to get to your destination. However, if we are on the wrong path, we will not reach our destination and may even go farther and farther away from it. Which is really sad, because you feel like lost, you know. When you talk to some atheist people, they are like, we are enjoying life. Oh, this tree is really beautiful. I'm enjoying its beauty. But when you ask them, so what? So what is the meaning of all this? They have nothing to tell you, you know. And you feel the depth of being lost in these people. I don't know why some people want to insist on whatever they are doing. Actually, this monologue reminded me of a verse in Holy Quran, which says that all of the people on the earth are aware of the truth of reality. The only reason why they want to oppose this reality and truth is that they want to be free to do whatever they want to do. And maybe this is a part of our nature, to be rebel, to be someone who wants to disobey Allah Almighty. But at the same time, the beauty of the story is that you have the will and you have the power to control yourself and to choose the right path. And as we have in the Holy Quran, Allah Almighty reminds us that I showed you the right path and the wrong path, and the choice is yours to choose whether you want to go through the right path or the wrong one. And let's keep it here. We're going to go for a short break, and then we're going to come back again, dear listeners. Stay tuned.
Your mercy, your love is all I need. All I need. All I need. It's all I need. It's all I need.
This is For a Better Life, and we are talking about the third approach towards spirituality, which is taking spirituality as a journey. Let's have another beautiful verse from Holy Quran. O man, you're trying hard to reach your Lord, and you will finally meet him. Having read this verse, some may think that there is nothing to worry about because we have all come from a good place and there is a good destination ahead. But, you know, our status when we meet God is of utmost importance. There are two states of reaching God: to reach him while he's happy with us, or to reach him while he's angry with us. Human beings are among the very few creatures whose levels of perfection are not fixed. That is, they have been given the capacity to upgrade or degrade themselves, which is at the same time a huge responsibility on our shoulder and a blessing. Thus, this spiritual journey consists of trying to increase our closeness and proximity to God. It should be noted that God is always close to us, but we are not necessarily close to him. And, you know, we can reach a position in which we can get closer and closer to God through self-purification, and as suggested by the glorious Quran, meet him. There is the possibility of losing our own selfhood, limits and boundaries, and then becoming identified with God. And that we have this actually beautiful concept in philosophy, in literature, in culture, everywhere. And this is a really vast, actually, topic that I don't have the knowledge to go through. But if you're interested in these kind of topics, I mean, the stage after you lose your selfhood and you go beyond your limitations, you go beyond your humanity, and you return to the Allah Almighty. This life is a journey, and we cannot say that we do not want to go on this journey. We are all on this journey, and it is up to us to gather enough provisions for ourselves. One of the main goals of self-building is to try to reduce this distance by wayfaring towards Allah. It means that the path towards him is infinite and full of challenges. However, for the people who embark on this journey, all the support and guidance are provided. In this regard, there is a beautiful narration from Imam Sajjad, peace be upon him, that may you be glorified. What a narrow path it is for whom you do not guide, and what a clear path it is for whom you have guided. In this part, and in these three episodes, we have discussed spirituality, or the process of self-building, as a kind of battle, medicine, and as a journey. Allah is encouraging and guiding us by demonstrating many ways and approaches towards spirituality and towards the last destination of the creation of human being. And he's showing us that there is always hope of reaching him and appeals to us in many different ways to encourage us to come closer to him. He is the most merciful. Thank you, dear listeners, for listening to me. It was all the time I had for today's episode, unfortunately. I wish you farewell. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.